Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're turning our attention to begin the program to bankruptcy. Ken Doran, Madison-based attorney, is our guest. He's the author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, second edition published by Random House. Really happy to have him along today to talk about pretty much any issue that you'd like to discuss relating to bankruptcy. I mentioned earlier that there were changes in the bankruptcy code that went into effect last fall. Some people saw those changes as nothing more than a debt collection plan for the credit card industry. We'll find out whether Ken thinks that's the case or not as we visit with him. And certainly, if you have questions, join in. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in the Madison area. Reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Ken Doran, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be here.
What's been the experience on this legislation so far? Are we seeing problems with it from the consumer side?
Well, there have been problems, and some of them may have been designed that way. The portions of the law that affected personal or consumer bankruptcies didn't, for the most part, change the final result for most people. Bankruptcy and Chapter 13 repayment plans, for the most part, work pretty much the same now as they did a couple of years ago. There were many changes that had the effect of making the system a little more complicated, more expensive, more tricks and traps to it, and that has kept everybody on their toes and caused grief for some people. And there were some actual changes in the law that make things come out differently for some people, but that really wasn't the main part of it. The basics of the law didn't change that much.
So most people who are in that situation, it's not a whole lot different from what it was a couple of years ago. What would be an example of where someone might be tripped up?
The law did introduce a calculation called a means test to screen people out based on income, which creates a fairly technical calculation of income and number of people in the household and the like, and screens people out based on that. Those who are above certain levels are potentially subject to a higher level of scrutiny, and that may affect the choice some people need to make between applying for a straight bankruptcy discharge of debts or a Chapter 13 plan, but it may affect people in both directions, depending on what debts people have. Some people who might have had to do a repayment plan before may no longer have to because of that, and some people go the other way. That may be the biggest change that actually affects very many people's actual cases.
If a person is in the situation considering bankruptcy, I would expect credit counseling would be a good thing for most people.
Well, good advice from a capable and trusted professional is almost never a bad idea if you choose well and know what you're getting. The law also did introduce what's called counseling, a fairly brief session that can be done in person or by telephone or in many cases online as a condition of filing, that may actually help some people, but it's basically a bureaucratic hoop that has to be jumped through for most people. And by the nature of the system, they get the counseling at the last stage when they've already decided they're going to file bankruptcy. And I don't think that's a very well-designed system, and I don't think for most people it actually helps very much. Anyone who is running into trouble with debts and thinks some good advice would help them really ought to act a lot sooner. There's no way a law can require people to get counseling if they might need to file bankruptcy a year later.
Yeah.
And the formal legal system just really doesn't work very well.
Ken Doran, our guest today, as we talk bankruptcy and all the issues surrounding it with him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. If you have a question, let's go to Becky in Winneconne. Hi, Becky. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. We are facing some enormous debt due to a very serious medical condition. and we don't have insurance. And for the very first time ever, we did have a mortgage several years ago. We have actually very, very limited income, almost minuscule. And I'm wondering if, because it's not credit card debt, and we didn't really, quote unquote, cause it, you know, as in the medical condition, I'm wondering if bankruptcy would be a viable option for us, or if we should just kind of bear with it and pay off what we can when we can and things of that nature. I will hang up and listen on the radio, but I appreciate your input.
Thank you, Becky. And by the way, and so you're saying that the bills that you have are really medical bills caused by an illness.
Exactly.
Not credit card debt.
Exactly.
Okay. Ken, comment.
Sure. Medical debts are nearly always dischargeable in bankruptcy, and medical expenses directly or indirectly are a major factor in putting people in a position where they need to consider bankruptcy, either the bills themselves or the strain of the expenses leading to other debts. Maybe some people owe credit cards, but maybe the reason they owe that is because their resources had to be diverted to medical bills. And in the long run, maybe the best way to reduce bankruptcy would be to do something constructive and fundamental about our healthcare system. Meanwhile, yes, if you have more medical bills than you're reasonably going to be able to pay, then at some point you may very well need to consider a bankruptcy. If it is ongoing and you don't have insurance and you will not be able to avoid incurring new bills in the future, you have to take that into account. I would strongly urge anyone in you know, Becky or anyone in a similar position to get some advice now and decide what ways of going about things may be better. Particularly, it sounded like they borrowed against their home, and that may be something that makes sense. It may be that they, if they do that at the wrong time or in the wrong amount, may be giving up some valuable rights. So the best I can say is that she ought to look at her options and talk to somebody who knows these laws before she makes further decisions. Even if the decision is not to file bankruptcy now or anytime soon, there's important information she should have to make those decisions.
Yeah, and in her case, you have to kind of think ahead. Maybe this was an accident, a car accident or something, mm-hmm. and the bills are pretty much over with, but maybe it's not. And if with future bills, you could foresee a problem with filing bankruptcy if you know that there are going to be more medical bills down the road.
Yeah, it may call for a very different strategy, depending on which of those seems to be the case.
Yeah. Thank you again for calling, and good luck to you. If you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. I got to believe that most people don't want to be in a position to have to file bankruptcy, and medical bills are probably a major reason for some people to file bankruptcy. And another may be home loans and variable loans and that sort of thing that have kind of crept up on people and created some problems for them.
Well, that certainly is one of the things that has been changing in the credit market in recent years. Consumer credit of all kinds, including mortgages, has become ever more available for a long time, and that probably is the key thing driving the long-term increase in bankruptcy. Mortgages have become more available. The market has changed. Technical changes designed to make money more freely available for mortgages, which has largely worked, but it's also tended to break down the connection between the people who make the loans and the people who are responsible for collecting the money. It's no longer the same group of people down at your local savings and loan or bank or credit union who are involved in both parts of that. They tend to be very different groups of people, which has led, perhaps not surprisingly, to more loans that are going to run into trouble. There's less reason to be very, very careful in approving loans for people whose finances may be overstretched if you're not the one who's going to be around if it doesn't work. And we're seeing very much the consequences of that in today's news.
Yeah, I just in my own instance, and this is certainly true for many people, I took a loan through a credit union for our home. This is some years back, and that loan's been sold. That was sold almost immediately, and then has been sold again. So it's from one company to another, and the tie to my credit union is nil when it comes to the home loan.
That's true, and it's very difficult to prevent that from happening when you take out a loan.
Yeah. Kathy in Platteville, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a comment for the lady that called about her medical bills.
Right.
And I work at a hospital, and I guess I would just urge her to, if a portion of her bills are hospital bills, to approach the hospital, because most hospitals have a community care program that can help someone with their bills. And depending on her income level, it might be as much as 100% that the bills would be discharged through the hospital. So that was just my advice for her.
Okay, so repeat that advice. So go back to the hospital.
Right. Most hospitals, especially if they're nonprofit hospitals, have what's called, they go by different names, but it could be community care or charity care, and they analyze your financial position, and they might discharge some of those debts, those medical bills, based on your income level and how much your debt is.
Kathy, thank you very much. That's valuable information.
Okay.
I appreciate it very much. And can a comment?
Yes, Becky ought to explore all of those options, and it may help. It sounded like she had an ongoing situation, and in my experience, it is rare that all or most of the medical bills are owed to one source like that. There tend to be a whole lot of them at the same time, and the difficulty is that many times even getting a major reduction from even the largest account may not be enough to resolve or change the situation, but it's certainly something she ought to look into. May at a minimum give them more time to try and work through their situation and perhaps get through that medical crisis to where they can get back on an even keel.
Yeah. Thanks again, Kathy. Appreciate your call very much. Someone else called in and wasn't able to hang on, but wondered how debtors' prisons evolved into the current situation of bankruptcy.
Over a very long haul, and I'm not that much of an expert on the history of this, although there has been some interesting historical work done on that in recent times. It has been a slow process. The bankruptcy laws as we have them can be traced back about, I think, 400 years to some British laws, and gradually evolved over time into a system where people who have more debts than they can handle and property within certain limits can apply to have those debts eliminated. And it has gone hand in hand. The availability of that and the increase in the availability of credit have grown up together, and I don't think that's an accident. It would be hard to have the levels of credit we have without that kind of a safety valve. And conversely, if credit were as limited as it were in previous generations, we probably wouldn't have as many bankruptcies or maybe as much need for the law.
Mm-hmm. Ken Doran, our guest today, Madison-based attorney and author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, published by Random House. I'm Larry Mueller. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 if you have a question. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little later on in the program, along about 11:45, we'll be talking with Michael B., Madison freelance writer, who has a new book. It's called, it's about the 30 most captivating moments in state history. In the book, It Happened in Wisconsin, published by Globe Pequot Press. So we'll look forward to that. Right now, though, we're talking bankruptcy with our guest, Ken Doran, Madison attorney. I'm really pleased to have him along. And again, if you want to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And let's go to Mary Lee in Green Bay. Mary Lee, hi. Thank you for calling. Mary Lee, are you there? Oh, we lost. Oh, we must have lost her. Apparently we lost her. I'm sorry. Mary Lee, if you want to call back, feel free, and we'll get you on the air. I'm wondering about abusives in bankruptcy. You hear, you know, people, some people complain, well, you know, it's so easy, and there's a lot of abuse of bankruptcy. Is that your experience, or do the numbers bear that out? Is there an abusive overuse of bankruptcy today?
Well, my experience of human nature is that any right or privilege that can be abused will be some of the time, and out of the over a million cases that are filed every year, it would be astonishing to the point of impossible if you couldn't find some abuses and people consciously scamming the system. Both from my own experience and everything I've read from responsible studies of it, the percentage of that is remarkably small. I don't find people doing this because they like it or because they understood it well enough to plan ahead. Very, very few people understand the laws well enough to plot strategies to take advantage of the law. There are some out there, but they're difficult enough that there's probably better ways to go about scheming your way to a fortune than using them anyway. It's just not that common. Most people consider bankruptcy as, I think, roughly analogous to a major medical treatment. It's not something you do because you want to or you like it, because it's something you've concluded you have to do to get on with your life for your own sake and your family's sake. And if people decide they need to do that, then they do it.
Yeah. I think we've got Mary Lee back from Green Bay. Mary Lee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm sorry that we had a little mix-up there.
That's all right.
I just have a question. A friend of mine had a lot of bills, didn't have insurance, had a lot of bills, and through the hospital, and he kind of walked away. He did not go through a bankruptcy, but he wasn't able to pay these bills because of his financial status. The hospitals don't take kindly to that, though, so I'm wondering if bankruptcy is the best thing to do. I'll take my answer off the air.
Mm-hmm. Well, he may need to look into it. It conceivably might work, depending on a variety of factors. There is a statute of limitations on debts, and some people can't pay their bills, simply do walk away and are able to get on with their lives. It's risky, though, if that happens and he goes a few years and has a good job and has started to invest in a house. If one or more of those big medical bills come back, he'll have the same problem as if it had happened right away. Once again, it wouldn't be a bad idea to get some good advice about his situation, decide whether he would rather, if it makes sense in the overall context of his finances, to file the bankruptcy and get a clean slate to be able to go forward without worrying about that. If some time has passed and it looks like the debts really are going to go away and stay away, he may not need that, but there's certainly, at least for a lot of years, going to be a cloud hanging over his head.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary Lee. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn now. Hi, Nick.
Hi, I'm being sued by a hospital here in Green Bay.
Okay.
So I'm filing for bankruptcy tomorrow, and I was wondering what I can expect when I go to meet with the lawyer.
Exactly what's happening tomorrow? You're meeting with the lawyer for the first time?
Yeah.
Well, then he or she is likely to have a lot of questions for you to make sure that the lawyer understands your situation. If you haven't been given any kind of a form or questionnaire, it would be very helpful to bring in a complete list of everybody you owe money to and at least the approximate amounts, whether...
Oh, God, I don't even know. I mean, well, I haven't had insurance up to 18, so...
Well, take your best shot at it. Put in 15 minutes or half an hour doing the best you can, even if it's imperfect, and
okay.
Also know what property you own and decent information on your income. And if you come armed with that information, a lawyer can sort through your situation and give you a pretty good idea what your options are.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. And that'll save some time in the attorney's office, because you're going to have to do it there if you don't do it ahead of time. And why not get that done?
Absolutely.
When you can really think carefully about it before you go and see the attorney. Walt in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Walt.
Hi. Say, I've from what happened about a year or whatever it was ago with this bankruptcy business, are there certain things that are prohibited to be collected by bankruptcy?
Well, there's a fairly complex set of laws about what can be eliminated by a bankruptcy and what can't. Some of the things that cannot be are, I'm generalizing, there's little exceptions to everything, but generally speaking, student loans, child support cannot be. Many taxes cannot be, although some, particularly older personal income taxes, sometimes can be eliminated by a bankruptcy. A few other things cannot. Most routine debts, including credit cards, medical bills, a lot of other things, can be eliminated. Another important point, though, is that most lien rights do not go away. If you have a house with a mortgage on it, you can't discharge the mortgage and keep the house free and clear, and the same with a car or the like. Those liens still have to be dealt with. So that's the very short condensed version of it, and from there on it gets complicated.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Walt. Laurel in Reeseville, your turn now. Hi, Laurel.
Hello. I have a question about my personal bankruptcy. I filed it about 5 years ago, and I just recently got a letter from the Department of Transportation revoking my driving privileges because one of the creditors on my bankruptcy had contacted them about trying to collect the debt. And I'm wondering, what paperwork do I need to find and who do I need to show it to get my driving privileges back? And after 5 years, how can they try and collect if they've been named on my bankruptcy?
Okay, this is definitely something that goes back, that happened before your bankruptcy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Then
the actual event happened in the 90s.
All right. Then it should be fairly simple. If you have copies of your bankruptcy papers, or if not, they're not that hard to track down. If the notice from the state has some contact information, I believe it's a safety responsibility section, I would call the numbers on there and tell them very specifically that this is a debt that is discharged in bankruptcy and what papers do you need to send. And if you run into a lot of trouble with it, then and it doesn't work quickly, you may need to consult a lawyer. But that's straightforward enough. You may be able to handle it on your own simply by providing those bankruptcy papers. So call the state office and ask what they want to see.
And it wasn't it wasn't a student loan, was it?
No, it was a debt having to do with a car accident that I was in. And I do have the copies of my papers, and they are named. So now I just have to contact the state.
I would. Well, was there in your bankruptcy, was this contested in any way? Did the people who are making this claim, did they fight your bankruptcy at all?
No.
Okay. Well, there's always a chance there's some additional complication, but the chances are very strong that you should be able to handle that just by providing that information.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Laurel.
Thank you.
And let's go to Mike Riley in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Larry. Great to hear your voice. It's a great show. I just had one quick comment. You know, we do personal injury work, and we run into a lot of cases where people have medical bills, which can be a huge problem. I know that a lot of the hospitals, not all in the cooperative, you know, they're willing to cooperate various, but a lot of hospitals have programs to discharge the bills if you simply don't have any ability to pay. So I think, you know, if somebody's in that situation, they should at least explore that with the hospital, because I know that we've had situations where the hospital has been willing to walk away where there simply wasn't any source of payment.
Thanks, Mike.
That's very good advice, and it may solve the situation for some people. The main reservation I have is that a lot of people that I see may owe $50,000 in medical bills and $20,000 in other bills, and if they're able to eliminate $30,000 of the medical bills by that course, that's terrific, but it may not change their situation.
Yeah.
It may not prevent them from having to file bankruptcy, but it's certainly worth an effort.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah. Appreciate the call. Mike Riley, who has been a guest on the program on several occasions. David in Ironwood, Michigan, it's your turn next. Hi, David.
Yes. I heard they tightened up on the bankruptcy laws. I just was curious exactly how worth it is. And then I also heard there's someone said there's some type of trust you could put your house into to avoid bankruptcy, but I also heard it costs a bit.
All right.
Well, first the changes in the bankruptcy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, it sounds like something for the rich.
Well, it may be on the trust. First of all, on the changes in the bankruptcy laws, we discussed a little bit. There were a package of changes a couple of years ago. It was a long list of fairly small changes for the most part, rather than one or two clear-cut ones. And it basically doesn't change the bottom line result available to most people. If you have more debts than you can realistically handle any other way, you probably at least ought to check out what your options are under a bankruptcy or Chapter 13. As far as the trusts, tricky business, and there's some real traps here. It's possible to take a situation that would have been okay if you'd left it alone, and by trying to get creative by things like trusts or putting things in other people's names to create a situation that is worse and that is very, very difficult to undo. So I would advise people to get very careful advice from multiple sources before they do that. It is very tricky business.
Very tricky business. In some states, if I'm out of Florida, I think was the example that came to mind. I was thinking back to some news items in the national news about well-known people who had moved to Florida and purchased very lavish homes and then filed their bankruptcy because they could keep the homes in Florida or something?
Florida and a few other states have what's called an unlimited homestead exemption, which means if my home is worth $1 million and it's free and clear and I owe a pile of debts, the creditors can't get at the value of my home, and that changes by state. Wisconsin's exemption is $40,000, which means the value, the net value above the mortgage up to that amount is protected from creditors but is exposed above it. That's probably about average, maybe even by now a little low. It hasn't changed in a long time. Some states have none or virtually none. Those recent bankruptcy amendments a couple of years ago put a couple of roadblocks in the way of people trying to move from one state to another to do that, but it didn't change the basic principles. If you live in one of those states and it is possible to have, you know, literally a homestead of any value, and it is protected from most creditors, not taxes, not child support, not some things, but for general business debts or whatever, it is protected.
Interesting. And David, again, thank you very much for calling. Ken Doran, our guest, as we talk personal bankruptcy with him. He's the author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, published by Random House. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in Madison, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. What does it cost, by the way, to file a bankruptcy petition?
Well, each lawyer or law office sets its own fees on that. They've gotten somewhat more expensive because of the additional procedural and paperwork requirements of the changes a couple of years ago in the law. And for a straightforward personal bankruptcy where you have debts that are not likely to create any disputes and not a lot of property that clearly fits within the allowed limits, the legal fees may be under $1,000 or depending on the area, maybe somewhat over $1,000. Plus, there's now about $400 in filing fees and related expenses have to be paid in most cases. Chapter 13 debt repayment is not going to be any lower than that and maybe somewhat higher. They tend to be a little more complicated. There's more legal work to be done. So it varies a lot with the local community and the particular case, but and can be more expensive than that by wide margin.
Depending on how complicated it is.
That's the approximate range.
James in Eau Claire, your turn now. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
So my question has to do with the exemptions. How specifically do you have to list them? Can I just say, like, living room, $2,000 and go from there? Do I have to, like, every single item in the room or whatever?
Depends partly on what you call local practice of how much detail the people who are handling your case require. Are you planning on filing on your own without a lawyer, or
no? Actually, I have an appointment tomorrow. Matter of fact,
well, and lawyers also depend on how much detail they insist on. I would follow what your lawyer wants. If he asks you to make a detailed list of you know dozens of different specific entries, do it. If he says categorizing it the way you said is fine, that's okay too. The thing is, for most people, the allowance is pretty generous. If you don't have a homestead to protect, then most people have at least $10,000 and maybe more of net value in household goods and such. And that we're talking not replacement or insurance value, but what you could get for it. You know, so a lot of things basically boils down to garage sale value. So that one, there are some tight limits. The Homestead one is tight, and a few others can create real problems. But that one is usually generous enough that in most cases it's simply not a problem.
Okay. Does that help you, James?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
Thanks for calling. Tim and Shano, it's your turn next. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Larry. My question is, I keep hearing all these people calling in about having medical bills that they can't pay and have to pay bankruptcy. Why don't these people have insurance? I mean, I'm self-employed, and we buy our own insurance. I mean, we have a higher deductible, but, you know, you can always, over the years, pay off, you know, $5,000 if you have to. I think if we really stress that, I think that would help out with a lot of these bankruptcies. And even, you know, I mean, where's the idea of pay your debts? I mean, I've always worked two jobs, and now, even now, I work, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. You know, take some personal responsibility and pay your debts and, you know, handle your responsibilities.
All right. Thanks for calling, Tim. Comment, Ken.
Well, you deserve full credit for being prudent about that and making it your business to see you have insurance, even if you have to pay for it independently, as you do. I'm not particularly an expert on the details of the healthcare system, and I'm sure over time Larry will have many people, many guests who can go into the nuts and bolts of that far better than I can. But I just can't agree that it's a solution of if everybody would be responsible and track down health insurance policies, these problems would go away. The barriers are just too huge for many people to be able to do that effectively. And a partial solution is for more people to do what you've done and pay the price to get their own insurance. Regrettably, I just can't believe it's anything close to a complete solution.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Tom in Sun Prairie, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I heard what the guy said about insurance, and I actually fit into that. When I was 18 years old, I came down with cancer, and I did have insurance. I worked for McDonald's, but they only paid up to, I think it was like 75%, so 25% I had to pay. $300,000 bill left me $60,000 in debt, I think it was. So it's a great philosophy to, you know, pay off everything, but I understand where you guys are coming from. Some situations you can't. But I wanted to point out also that when I went bankrupt, my lawyer added on something that kind of surprised me for the state of Wisconsin. I had a child, and my child was on the welfare system with the mother, and I was paying child support at the time, but then I went down because of, you know, the medical. And so the welfare department came after me for child support. It wasn't mother-ordered because of the mother understood I was sick and stuff. So I ended up owing a state debt, but they called it child support. It was for paying back the welfare system what my son used. He added that, and the welfare worker lawyer came down to the, when you go in for that court hearing for the bankruptcy,
right.
And
yeah.
It was very strange because the judge looked at the lawyer and said, is it owed to the mother and child, or is it something that is owed to the welfare department? And they said, well, it's child support. He has to pay back because of his mother and the mother of the child and child's on welfare. Judge said, no. If it's welfare owed child support, you can go bankruptcy on it. It's only if it's court ordered that you're paying to the mother and child, then you can't go bankruptcy on it. But if the state comes after you and says your kin is on welfare, so therefore now you have child support and it's welfare going after you, you can actually file for that. Because I was down with this. I had a bone cancer, and it took me 4 years to recover. So that was a lot of debt that actually, and then they based it on my job, and they wanted me to pay $300 court fee for me going in if I wanted to say, hey, I have to change this, but I was so bedbound over the chemotherapy and stuff, because in those days, chemo really hits you hard. It's not like today's day where they got other medicines to help you.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd just point that out, because a lot of fathers, you know, I've heard nightmare stories where they've moved out of state. They've been paying the family, and then also when they come home and realize they've got this big old debt called welfare child support, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's have Ken. Thanks for calling, Tom. Is that correct in your mind, Ken?
I'm sure that he's describing his case correctly, but it also, I'm confident happened several years ago, and those laws have changed. So unfortunately for him or someone similarly situated, the result would probably be different today, even if the money is owed to the state rather than to the other parent or ex-spouse. It is not likely to be discharged in bankruptcy. Child support is one of the things that's least able to be reduced or adjusted in any way by any kind of a bankruptcy.
Okay, so this it could have been very obviously was possible back when the time that Tom went through this, but no longer that is
correct.
The case.
Those laws have changed, yes.
Okay. Tom, thank you. Amy in Exonia, your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi, I'm calling in response to that other caller that you just recently had saying about if people would just pay for the health care bills. He obviously hasn't been put in the position where, you know, everything was going hunky-dory in life financially and some big thing happened that you've now got all these medical bills and either the hospital or the clinic or what have you wants you to pay them in a specific amount of time or they're going to come after you for collections or whatnot. As a matter of fact, we just had a bill that we thought was a certain amount. I got a phone call the other day and they're like, no, it's this amount. We can set you up where you get a specific loan thing through a bank, which we don't even qualify for loans normally, and they want to force us to take a loan to pay off a medical bill that we can't afford to pay at this time. I'm willing to make payments, but regardless of the fact, they want to put you on their schedule instead of a schedule that actually works for you financially. And for him to come on and say, well, if people would just pay their medical bills the way they should and have a certain kind of insurance, you can't always pick what you get for insurance. If you're working at a certain job, you can't afford to go out and get your own. You have to deal with whatever you get.
Yeah. Ken, comment?
Well, I agree with him. Given the realities of the current system, if you just don't have employer insurance or qualify for any government insurance program, if you can possibly swing it, I surely do recommend getting your own private insurance as a way of dealing with it. It's a good thing. But he seemed to be saying that that was an overall solution, and I just don't believe that. And like I say, that's a subject on which I'm just another citizen with an opinion and not an expert of any kind. But I don't think that everybody try harder to buy insurance is the solution to the overall problem.
Yeah. Thanks, Amy. Appreciate the call. Sue in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Sue.
Hello. I hope this is a quick question. I realize you deal, Mr. Dorn, with personal bankruptcy. My question is if one can file for business bankruptcy without affecting one's personal assets, and of course, to be more complicated, marital property, personal assets.
I can give you a good, clear answer to that, which is maybe.
Okay.
Depends on a lot of things. How the business is set up, is it a corporation or an LLC? Mm-hmm. To what extent have there been personal guarantees or tax liabilities that follow over to the owner? And the answer may come out very, very different in different situations depending on that. So I don't think there's any way to give you a useful answer to that without knowing the specific answers
to
a lot of those questions.
I appreciate the complexity of it.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Sue. Appreciate your call. The Harvard study of Americans in bankruptcy, we've spent so much time on illnesses here and hospital bills. Half of the people in that, three quarters of the people in the Harvard study of Americans in bankruptcy court had health insurance, but that did not protect them from financial disaster anyway. And I guess that just goes back to our whole comment on our healthcare system and mm-hmm. where we are or are not.
Well, it's absolutely a patchwork system, and good portion of the country, perhaps a majority, has good enough insurance that one way or another we're largely protected from this, although no one is completely. But a lot of the people have incomplete insurance. I recently had a lawsuit against a client who was from Illinois. He had pretty good health insurance but had a heart attack in Wisconsin and required several days of fairly intensive treatment. submitted it to his insurance company. They paid what they thought was right, and then he ended up getting sued a year later for something like $15,000 more. And and we eventually were able to get that reduced, but that's how the system works. And someone who was struggling financially, that kind of a thing can tip them over into having to look at a bankruptcy or a Chapter 13 repayment. And like I say, it's a whole other subject, but if we were able to solve or greatly improve our healthcare financing, it would keep a lot of people out of bankruptcy, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I guess as I haven't looked at the figures recently, but the amount of savings that most Americans have is fairly limited. So when something like this comes up, as you say, it doesn't take much to tip the scales the wrong way.
Well, that's true. And for most people, if they do have substantial savings one way or another, it's part of their long-term preparation for retirement. And that can happen, too. As someone who's been prudent about retirement runs into a severe enough health problems, and between the medical and other direct costs, find they have no choice but to draw down their retirement. And you, when that happens, you've solved one problem, at least temporarily, but in the process created another one.
So. Yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure, Ken. I thank you very much for being with us today. Appreciate it. And we'll look forward to, hopefully you'll come back and visit with us.
I'd be glad to. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Ken. Ken Doran is a Madison-based attorney and author of Personal Bankruptcy and Debt Adjustment, second edition. It goes through a lot of information on how to make a fresh start, the process simplified as much as it is possible, and how to survive a personal bankruptcy. So lots of information in that book, and we're pleased to have him with us to talk about it. And he'll be back. We'll do this again with him. Coming up, we're going to take a look at a bounty of compelling Badger State stories with our guest, Michael B. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.